Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. There was an interesting email we received the other day that told us about the NAACP in California coming out for the referendum that would legalize drugs in California, legalize marijuana in California. It shocked a lot of people. Why would the NAACP do that? So it was also, it's a referendum that the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP, helped push and sponsor in California. And we've had them on before. And it says a great deal when leading police officers retired and active duty across the country say that we should legalize. Should we? We're going to talk about that this hour. You can join us at 410-319-8888. We are joined in studio by Lee Maddox, who is a board member of LEAP. She's retired as a captain for the Maryland State Police in 2007. She's now a professor at the University of Maryland School of Law. Joining us by phone is Matthew Fogg, who's a retired chief deputy U.S. Marshal and works also with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP. And Matthew Fogg and Lee Maddox, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me on.
It's good to have you here. Let me start, if I might. There's so many pieces of this to cover that I'd like to start with you, Matthew. There was something interesting I saw on the LEAP website where you said something very similar to what the NAACP said, which is right. Racism drives the war on drugs.
That's correct.
Talk a bit about that.
Well, it does. I mean, all of the statistics that come out right now show, when we look at all the empirical data, we show that disproportionate number of African Americans are arrested when it comes down to cocaine use, when it comes down to marijuana. Just all the way across the board, all drug use, we find that disproportionate numbers of African Americans are arrested. And the racial profile, it is real, it's systemic, and it's all across the country. And what are we doing to stop it? I know that when I ran a drug and gun and addiction task force working for the Drug Enforcement Administration, I was out there on the front lines, and I saw it with my own eyes, who we were locking up, the areas that we were targeting, how we were going into mostly urban areas doing our drug and gun and addictions. And when I raised the question, why are we, you know, if this is an equal enforcement operation, why are we seeming to go to these urban areas, and I was told by my superiors, look, we go out into the more affluent neighborhoods and start locking those folks up, we're going to get a phone call. And that call is going to be somebody's congressman, senator, you know, judges, lawyers, people who have affluence. And the bottom line is we would be shut down, so it's best to stay with the weakest link, which, you know, the whole war. And that's why when you look at this war, you see exactly what is happening in California. We could take the empirical data to any one of the states in the United States, we'll see the same thing.
Now, Lee Maddox, one of the things that the studies have shown that the percentage-wise, young black kids are less likely to use drugs than young white kids, yet they fill the jails. And that, I mean, that's kind of a been a clear thing. But I'm curious your end of this as well, and why you decided to become, as a former captain of the Maryland State Police, a law enforcement against prohibition.
Yeah. Well, back in 2001, when I was in my second year of law school, I
and still a state cop.
Still a state cop.
Right,
I was
right.
Bear commander down at Easton at the time, and I lost a very dear friend who was a state trooper working undercover in D.C. He was shot point blank, drug deal gone bad, and that day I said to myself, you know, we have to look harder at our drug policies. This shouldn't be happening. We shouldn't be losing good people like this. And so over the course of time, I thought a lot about our policies and our procedures. I had an opportunity to work actually implementing the consent decree that came out of the state police being sued for racial profiling. And we did a lot of studying. And I'm convinced to this day that our disproportionate enforcement is not a result of individual bias of the police officer. It's more systemic than that. And, you know, it's where we focus our resources in the areas that have more problems, predominantly in African-American and out in California and Latino communities. They're getting more cops in their streets, and therefore more people are getting arrested. And the report that came out, Targeting Blacks for Marijuana, put out by the DPA, spells that out very clearly. And I'm very glad to hear that the NAACP is getting on board with this issue, because we've got to change the way we're doing business.
I mean, this is... And I'd like our listeners to join us here, 410-319-8888. Is it time to legalize it, as Bob Marley would sing? Is it time to end the war on drugs in America? And we're here with two members of LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. 410-319-8888 is the number. Matthew Fogg, retired U.S. Marshal, and Lee Maddox, retired state police, Maryland State Police, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on that? I mean, there's a lot of I'm curious how you think that would happen. I mean, well, let me just, before I ask you that question, I mean, one of the things that happens a great deal is that when we look at the legalization of drugs, as the end of this article I read from California said about the NAACP endorsing this referendum, this ballot measure, is everybody thinks there's always a bunch of stoners who want to see drugs legalized. My guess is neither one of you two fit that category. So
I don't think the potheads are ever going to manage to get drugs legal. It's going to take mainstream society. It's going to take the economists. It's going to take the police. It's going to take the courts. Understanding that our systems are broken and falling in on themselves and are very inefficient. That's when it's going to happen.
Matthew?
Well, to me, it would happen if we were to make it an equal enforcement opportunity operation. I mean, I think if we were, just like what the was told to me, and I know this for a fact, if we were out there, for example, let's just say it was proportionate, the same way alcohol prohibition ended, it would have ended. I mean, what we say, those who make the laws, those who have the influence in this country, would not have stood by to see their children, their daughters, their relatives in those prison systems the way they are now. So we understand and realize that as long as it's disproportionate to people who aren't looked at as, you know, a lot of times as equal in America anyway, we say that it continues and it always is a study. Let's do the next study. Let's think about it. So, again, just like alcohol prohibition, at some point someone said enough is enough. Let's end this now. And we find it's the exact same thing. We find the fallout from the drug war, the numbers of folks that are being killed, the collateral damage behind it is growing. But when does it end? And I say it ends when you make it fair and just.
We're talking about the legislation in California. That's part of what we're talking about, which is called the Regulate, Control, and Tax Cannabis Act of 2010, that many people think will pass. What are your thoughts? Maybe it won't. We'll see. 410-319-8888. Ricky in the Inner Harbor, you're on the air.
Good evening, sir, and I'd like to say good evening to your guests. I've been listening, and I'm really proud of and in admiration of these two individuals who have been on the inside of law enforcement and have had the courage and goodwill to come forth to call it like they see it and call it like it is, in terms of who's being targeted and victimized as a result of what they allege is illegal drug usage. As well, the first time I heard the notion of legalizing, or should I say decriminalizing, drugs was from former Mayor Kurt Schmoke of Baltimore City. Of course, that was shot down by none other than our president at that time, George Herbert Walker Bush, the father, who considered it to be hogwash. Still, I think Kurt Schmoke's idea, and that's the first time I've ever heard of it, his notion was the decriminalization. I think he had the right idea. And I think if more of us became aware that decriminalizing drugs will stop the systemic flow of the victimized, meaning those in urban areas across the country, particularly those of African ancestry, our young people and young adults, it will stop the systemic flow of them in and out of prison. And it would do a great deal to, defeat the policy, this war on drug, which is infamous for victimizing a certain category and group of people.
Ricky, thank you for being part of the show. And I do remember when Kurt Schmoke did that, and then he was really attacked and had to backed away from.
Yeah, he was ahead of his time. But I think it's important that we remember the distinction between legalization and decriminalization. Because I think if you just go with decriminalization and you make it okay for people to possess, you know, a half ounce of marijuana or whatever, you're not going to get to the black market. You're not going to get to the violence. Until we take the profit out, legalize and regulate, the violence will continue in the streets and in the communities here in Baltimore. So I think it's a fine distinction, but it's an important one. And you can look at all the violence going on today in Mexico, who decriminalized, and see what they're dealing with now.
I mean, thank you, ma'am.
And Matthew, let's talk about that for just one moment. We'll go back to the phones here. A lot of folks are calling in, so we want to get to their calls. But the issue here that part of the idea here is that both the violence in the streets of Baltimore and New York and St. Louis and Chicago and Miami and wherever, L.A. and wherever it is, and the violence, which is even more horrendous in Mexico, This if they were legalized, part of the argument goes, Matthew Fogg, that this would it would take away the thunder of the cartels and the drug gangs here.
That's correct. It would tap into the black market issue, the funding of it. And as you know, you go back to the money source, you can kill the head. But I think the reason why, even sometimes in the black community, folks will say decriminalize, because we're having a double whammy effect on black folks. Not only are we being victimized by the crime behind it, but we're being victimized by the civil rights issue of it, the human rights issue of it, the fact that the nation is wrong, is racially profiling, is violating its own United States Constitution by disproportionately operating in this manner, then it's a double whammy for us. So what we're saying is, hey, even if you go to decriminalization, you would at least take out that aspect of it, of who you're actually throwing in these prisons. Of course, I do agree, you still would probably get the cartels and the folks would still control it, and we definitely want to change that as well.
I wonder what you, unless you want to comment on it as well, Lee, what would the world look like? Supposing that bill actually passed, supposing that drugs were legalized in America, it would seem to me you'd have to kind of think of a whole, if it was legalized, there'd be a great deal more you'd have to kind of figure out how you would address the legalization of drugs.
This needs to be very thoughtfully thought out. There are lots of different regulatory models out there that may or may not be appropriate for certain types of drugs. I think it needs to be a community-based decision. You know, what kind of regulation fits well for the nature of the certain community that you're thinking about. You want to structure the regulation in a way that you encourage people to move into the mainstream economy and in a way that gets away, you know, that reduces the black market. So it's a balancing act with the regulation. And you know, time, place, and manner restrictions. We can learn a lot of lessons from what we've done with tobacco. I mean, tobacco has come a long way. We've actually cut addiction rates, which we haven't been able to do with any of the other drugs, by 40% across the board, simply by moving to an education and a time, place, manner restriction model. It's been phenomenal, and I'm convinced if done properly, we can have the same sort of impacts with marijuana.
410-319-8888. Bill and Jessup, you're on the air.
Thank you both for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
As a health professional, I just question whether they are, in regards to the statistics of habitual marijuana use, 85% of the time the individuals turn to a higher drug substance. Then that person becomes addicted to another substance, and the cycle repeats itself and repeats itself. So when you say legalization to cut down on the crime element, are you just adding another problem by saying, well, now our society, we have a new addiction rather than alcohol, rather than smoking. Now everybody's addicted to drugs that wants them, and you turn into a whole new set of problems with unemployment, people getting fired because they can't get to work on time, you know, and it snowballs.
Yeah, Bill, but the problem is everybody's already addicted to drugs, and we're putting them in jail.
That's right. I mean,
but when you talk about legalization, you're freeing up a lot more people to try to experiment.
Well, what we're freeing up is a lot of money to be able to help those folks. We believe it's an issue, it's a harm reduction issue. We believe it's an issue where people should be allowed to go and get treatment to understand the education aspect, the same way with alcohol. I mean, we understand that it is a drug. We understand that it can go into the body. We understand it can create problems. But we want to know, what we found out is that the same amount of folks who are using drugs will use them. I mean, people will, if they want drugs, if they want alcohol, they want tobacco, if they want marijuana, cocaine, it doesn't matter. They will get it. It's just that what we're creating is this black market. If somebody in my family was killed simply because they were standing on the sidewalk because there was this what we call drug war going on, and they weren't using it themselves, I would be more upset than if I understood better the fact that, okay, we didn't have this war, but yet we got people using that we wish they wouldn't use. So we're just saying this is a way to take out some of the harm, that the collateral damage and all of the harm that having a war on drugs is doing, as opposed to not having the war on drugs.
And let me just say that, we'll have this linked on our website here in the next day, but all the studies that I've read and kind of reread thinking about this show coming up, it's exactly just the opposite, that over 80% of people who smoke marijuana do not go on to using harder drugs. And the studies started in the 1970s with study showing that people who smoked marijuana, 30% would try LSD, acid, 70% would not, 20-some percent ended up shooting heroin, the others did not. So I think that it's actually a misnomer to say that.
Well, that's true for the person who's already been using marijuana. I'm talking about a new...
No, that's not true either. No, I don't think the studies verify that at all.
I beg to differ for you. You're wrong on that.
Well, I'll tell you what. You write to me, okay. Mark, M-A-R-C, B, Steiner, or just it's easier, mark@steinershow.org, M-A-R-C, and you show me those studies. I'll write you back, and we can have this debate further on the air.
Okay.
I'll be glad to read those studies. 410, thanks for calling, Bill. 410-319-8888. Larry in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes. I was listening to your show, and I couldn't help but having, I guess, a small degree of satisfaction in hearing some retired law enforcement officers saying what some of us in the criminal justice system on the defense side have been saying for many years, that there is something openly, blatantly, and intentionally racist about the enforcement of narcotics laws in Baltimore City and as they indicated, across the nation. The other point that I wanted to make was that I thought that a lot of the opposition to the decriminalization or legalization of drugs comes from the fact that there has been a whole sort of economic dependence, so to speak, on the entire drug culture. And I don't just mean those guys who are out selling the drugs and making money off of it, but I mean the police officers who get paid thousands of dollars a year in overtime to chase these little 20-year-old kids on the corner selling $15 worth of crack cocaine at a time.
Well, I think, just in terms of time, how would this affect the jobs you had in law enforcement? Matthew and then Lee.
You'd have a lot of law enforcement officials out of a job. I mean, the bottom line is judges, lawyers, prosecutors. I mean, just look at the statistics and see who a lot of the cases that are made are because of the fact that it was on the drug war. So I mean, yeah,
Matt, I have to disagree with you on that. I don't think that jobs would be reduced. I think that priorities would shift. We would be solving more murders. We would be solving more rapes. We would be doing the kind of policing that the community wants us to do, and we're not doing it by locking up kids on the corner and getting them into the system when they're 13 years old.
Well, I mean, I certainly I understand your point. I'm just saying I believe, though, certainly we would lose jobs. Maybe not as many, but I mean, we would. I just believe it just from the fact that when we look at how many arrests and how much money is dumped into the drug war, I certainly agree that we believe that police officers and law enforcement people should be centering their attention more to what we call violent crime. They've made use of drugs violent crimes. But I agree with you 100% that maybe it's not as much, but there would be, I believe there would be a loss.
Hopefully there would be a loss of employment in our prison systems, and we could stop building a new prison like the juvenile facility they're talking about building here in Baltimore. Build it and you will fill it. Hopefully some of those jobs will go away. And then instead of the police officers, you know, getting credit for locking somebody up for possession of marijuana, maybe they can get credit for giving somebody a referral to a substance abuse program. And wouldn't that be nice?
That would be refreshing.
Sally, I think it is one of the fears.
Sally in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about time to decriminalize marijuana. In a capitalist society, you can tax it. You can make money off of it. You can use hemp, which, I mean, is a viable product for ropes and all kinds of things.
And clothes and many other things.
Many other things that we just, I mean, economically it's feasible. Marijuana is used for so many people to help with chemotherapy. It is a wonderful drug that carte blanche across the board. We have determined that we are not allowed to use it under penalty of law, and it's a huge mistake.
Let's try one more caller in here before we run out of time. Clarence, you're on the air. Very quick thought, Clarence.
Good evening, Mr. Steiner. Thank you very much. I see this as a classic example of America not being able to solve a problem, and they're going to create a bigger problem with the method that they want to solve it with. What are you going to do when all of the college students that I happen to pick up and take to bars every night, not only are now alcoholics who are visibly alcoholics, now alcoholics and marijuana users? I'm going to feel very comfortable when I look around at society and see everybody high off of something.
Well, Clarence, we only have like a minute left, so I'm going to let one of our guests maybe leave a response to that very quickly.
I just think that the fears of increased use across the board are unfounded, and I think that if we use proper regulations and control and education and prevention programs, that we're not going to see that.
Right,
Matthew?
100%.
What'd you say, Clarence?
It was Matthew.
Oh, Matthew?
Yeah, I said I agree with Leah 100%. I mean, definitely, it's not going to. It's, I mean, these folks are using the people that he thinks is not using marijuana, using it anyway. If they're alcoholics, most likely. But the bottom line is, what we're finding again, we're trying to say, how do we reduce the harm, the fallout from the war on drugs? It's not the fact that folks are going to use drugs who want to use them, no matter who they are. Students can get drugs. We found out that they're cheaper, they're easier to get. Marijuana is. It's just so easy to get. I mean, you grow it, whatever. We're just trying to say, why is the United States spending all this money? Why is California? They've come to their senses. We're spending all this money to fight a war that is not winnable. What we're trying to say is, how do we change our focus, our policy procedures, and say, how do we go now and teach people what happens when you use these drugs?
Matthew Fogg, retired Chief Deputy U.S. Marshal. And Lee Maddox, retired captain from Maryland State Police, who's now professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law, both members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, talking about the NAACP's decision to back legalization in California during the referendum coming up. I want to thank both of you for being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, go to www.mecu.com. We'll be right back. A conversation with Heather Booth about today's bill being battled on Congress, about our financial reform of America. We'll be right back. Stay with us.